My first question whenever I have a conversation is, how do you treat your people? I'm not as worried about how you treat your customers, because how you treat your people predicates how you're going to treat your customers.
If you want to get stuff done, then you have come to the right place. This is the Get Stuff Done podcast, brought to you in association with RDI Worldwide, a weekly interview series with prominent and diverse people from around the world who will share their own unique insights on what it takes to get stuff done and their personal strategies for doing so. My name is Gordon Dudley, the creator of the Get Stuff Done project and host of this podcast. Thank you so much for being with us. We hope you enjoy this episode and would love to hear your feedback anytime. Let's get stuff done. It's time to get stuff done. Today, I am delighted to be joined by Irene Chan. Irene is the head of commercial at the office of the CEO with Temus, the management consultancy arm of Temasek, which is a Singaporean state-owned multinational investment firm. Irene and I got connected via the community called Pavilion, of which I'm sure we will talk about later in the episode. But Irene is also sought after within the transformation of organizations. Growth and revenue growth has been her particular focus throughout her career within the APAC region. And she has been heavily involved in the GTM teams of various multinational businesses, which I'm sure we can also get into. She has a deep experience both in startups and scale-ups. And as I mentioned, she is a member of the Pavilion community, for which she is very heavily involved and proactive, which is why I wanted to get her onto the podcast today, because clearly she is someone who likes to get stuff done. So Irene, you're currently in Singapore. So thank you so much for being a guest today.
Thank you, Gordon. I'm looking forward to it, and thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Now, people will have heard of your first few words there and be immediately thinking that sounds like an Australian accent. So tell us a little bit about your background.
Yeah. A little bit interesting of a journey. Born in Singapore during the White Australia policy, which meant that for a few years, if you were not white, you needed to have your baby outside of Australia. So born in Singapore, lived here 3 weeks, and then brought up on Christmas Island, then into Australia. Asian background, as you can half tell.
Okay. And how long have you now been based in Singapore?
Yeah, I have worked across APJ my entire career, based in Singapore for probably the last 3 to 4 years. So finally coming home, I think is what they would call it. But yeah, enjoying it over here.
And in terms of your role, which I understand is relatively new, what is it that you are focusing on within that area?
Yeah, look, you know, Gordon, it's super exciting, and thanks for asking. It's a new opportunity for me to work with an organization that is really very focused on its citizens. An organization that is so passionate about bringing up not just digital transformation, but also in driving excellence and talent from Asia out, you know, and that is something which is purposeful to be part of. And it speaks a lot about, I think, what drives me is in giving back and being of service and finding your why, you know. So part of my role here is primarily initially to set up the commercial arm. And what I mean by that is, as the company is exploding and growing fast, is putting together the rigor around how we operate, efficiency, so that we can innovate and continue with our massive growth. And then the part that I love the most, which is then supporting the explosion into revenue growth and diversification.
Can I ask why finding your why for others is important to you?
Yeah. You know, you can work in a lot of places. You can do your job and get a paycheck. But there is also the amount of time you spend at work is the amount of time that you're also away from your family. So it better be worthwhile. And I think as I've gone through my career, what's really been encapsulated for me is being blessed with mentors who've really shown me what good could look like. And you spoke about Pavilion a little bit earlier on. It also is similar to why I was resonating with the Pavilion organization, where there is a way to lead and there is a way to build businesses where you're leaving behind the right way of doing things, being kind, having values. And so leading with why is super important for me is remaining authentic and true and realizing it's not about performing your job, but also it's impactful. You know, decisions that we make as leaders, we have to be considerate, right? We choose to be people managers. And in the world that I come from in GTM is when you're working towards a go-to-market strategy or whether we expand here or not, you're talking about individuals that if you don't set your business up properly, you've got work colleagues who have mortgages that they're paying for, who mental wellness may creating an environment of cultural safety. So that why predicates not only where I choose to be at, but also how I choose to show up.
It makes a lot of sense. And I fully 100% agree with that approach. Now, we both started our careers in previous decades. We don't need to go into the exact specifics of when, but certainly I feel that in that time, there was not so much discussion about these kind of things. It was not such prominent such discussed topic. So I'm curious, did you always have this mindset? Was it something that you found at your start of your career? Hey, why are we not talking about these things? Or was it also something that was just the way things were at that time? And you have also now over time realized about the importance of these things?
Yeah, I think, you know, there was a Harvard study that was done that had stipulated that, you know, 99% of your success is also driven by the environment that you surround yourself with. And 85% of your happiness is how you approach this. And that's super important. You know, being brought up in an island that was a restricted territory, we only had Navy coming out on sorties. My first few roles were with security industries where, you know, my mentors and my chiefs were ex-Navy SEALs, ex-military. My teams were ex-military. It really hones you with the value systems, you know. Yes, I was brought up with families the family was very humble and really believed in the hustle. But then when you add on top of that, being surrounded by Navy and then, you know, going into my first few jobs and having mentors who set a way of behavior and an expectation of integrity and loyalty and taking care of your people, regardless of what's happening around you. I think that's really set myself on a really good path. I'm super blessed, you know, to have those mentors very early on.
And a lot of people feel that they don't acquire mentors naturally. How was it for you? Was that a kind of like proactive process or did it just kind of assimilate and come to be?
I think when you have a father like mine, you're taught to be humble from day one. You don't get a bit too big for your breeches. And for me, it was very much being curious, being inquisitive, and opens yourself up. And I feel honestly that that's what opened me up for people to be open to come in and say, look, if you're open and you're interested and you're humble, I'd be happy to coach you, listen to you, share some insights. And that's how, you know, I found mentors and coaches is okay. By being humbly inquisitive, but also right. Respectfully giving back. You know, as one of those where you don't just give back to the coach who's given you their time and their insights, but you pay it forward. It's something that is so important.
Humbly inquisitive. I like that. I think that's a really nice way of putting it. Now, pay it forward. I absolutely, that's like one of the first things that I associate with you since we were initially first meeting through this community, this kind of industry network. And I just saw how proactive you were about helping others. Anytime somebody had a question that, you know, had some experience in, you were always so quick to share your thoughts. And even I saw so many times you giving offers to kind of take it offline, to even devote more time. So I can see that it is fully authentic. That's your approach. What is it that drives you to do that and to be like that? Because there's still very much the, you know, nice guys finish last, you know, mentality in industry. You know, speed is such an important part of the tech industry and startups, that element of it. So how do you kind of balance those two elements?
Two things, Gordon. You know, firstly, you know, good guys finish last. I think Sam Jacobs from Pavilion put a book out, right? Kind Folks Finish First.
Okay.
I think the book that he put forward, which is what resonated for me to be part of the Pavilion community. But also, you know, they're selfish, and I'll be honest about it. Firstly, in strategy, in transformation, I go in a lot of times when things are chaotic or an organization's on a precipice and they're like, I don't know what you do, Irene, just do what you did with the other organizations, stabilize them and take them off. And okay. I learned, you know, I'm an old lady and I've learned the hard way that the way to really have sustained scalable growth and play the long game is you first look after your people. You first create a place of safety. So it's a bit strategic sometimes that leaning in and the giving. One is because you get more than you give. I honestly get so much more than I give. And creating that level of safety and being able to say, look, you know, this is the environment. This is how I behave. Mm-hmm. Then you hope to put that out in the universe and at some point get that back, you know, and then we create that momentum. But then also secondarily, gosh, there's so much, you know. There's always this thing where, as you've gone through with experience, if you've gone through in the ranks, you give back and you share and you tell. I'm a mother, and I can tell you there's no more leveling an effect than being a parent and actually learning that sometimes we do get caught in our ways, and sometimes, especially as you go up in senior leadership, you kind of assume. And there's no better leveler than giving and then also having that door open to listen and keep tactile with what is happening today and cross-generational. Being able to offer an insight from my perspective, it's also humbly putting it out there and saying, well, this is what I've learned, warts and all, but, you know, how does that work for you? Because it's okay also to share lost stories that, or, you know, where things didn't work out and this is what I learned out of it.
I think that's what you've touched upon there is exactly what has driven this more inclusive type of approach. It's being vulnerable. Whereas in the past, it was not okay to be vulnerable, right? Women were seen as weak. Men were seen as not strong. And so we just couldn't kind of open up about it. It's now been a relatively long time since failing fast has become a thing. I think in certain countries, certain sectors, it's still very much taboo and it's still not the done thing, but it is, I think changing a lot. So I think that is an element of whether that's at the kind of company wide level, right down to the one-on-one manager and employee level. I think that has definitely changed. And as you also talked about parenting, I think, you know, sometimes I flip it back on my kids and it's like, you know, how, you know, do you think that makes me feel, I also get sad or frustrated with these kind of things. And I don't have to be the stern, serious parent as well. So, yeah, I think that is definitely a broad change that's happened. And for you, I don't know whether you want to say in your current organization, but kind of in organizations that you have been experienced in, have you felt that change, regards to as a person?
Oh gosh, absolutely, absolutely. You know, I think I put on that persona initially with maybe before I had children or when the children were younger. And so I'd be empathetic, but I don't think I was 100% in. It was one of those, you know, this is going to get me to plan B. This is going to get me moving on. And in tech especially, you know, in the period that I've been in, there have been some very rocky periods. And you realize very quickly that we are dealing with people, you know, that are parents, that are someone else's child, someone else's partner. And it's not just a number that you're going to do a reduction in force with. So where I see a real shift has been where we've actually gone into the acquisition cycles. There's been significant acquisitions of, for example, nearly all the firms I've been at, I can now just generally say Broadcom, because they've all been acquired. But okay, going through those acquisition cycles and being part of acquisition teams, you start to realize over time, it's not a reduction in force. I'm talking about somebody who's a parent, who's a child, who's a partner, you know? And the way in which we approach having that meeting with a little pink envelope is very, very different. Taking the considerations to actually get to know your people, planning well ahead so that we are efficient in the way we operate as a company to minimize opportunities of reductions in force, and or setting up check-in points where they're 360 so that there's no bias or reduction in bias. All of these things come into play. But I also wonder whether I'm seeing more of it now and whether it was in play. It's just that as I grew as an individual and learned to be more authentic with myself, I used to think that, especially in the corporate world and especially being very young into leadership and being an Asian female, I had to present myself a certain way. Now, who you see at a community event, who you see at the rugby field or at the dance comp is the same person you see at a board meeting. You know, one authentic individual. I don't have different faces.
Yeah, I also was very happy to hear at my kids' new school they've just started at, that they're very strong with pastoral care, and they said that there will inevitably be moments where there are things happening outside of school which will affect them in school. And they referenced family pet passing away. Of course, it could be even more serious type of things, an illness, right? Physical health. But they acknowledge that these things happen, that inevitably happen, and that affects us. And so I think with, Korea still not having any mandatory paid sick leave, going on, whereas of course companies have stepped in to offer that where they feel that it is necessary. I mean, I was going to ask you whether you've dodged any bullets, whether there were at the time of getting to know an organization, maybe even interviewing and getting close to joining that organization, whether you encountered any red flags and you immediately said, hey, this is not the kind of organization, this is not the culture that I want to be a part of, and you very fortunately avoided that. Just wonder if you had any experiences like that.
Let me think about that. There have been, let me share Sarah's situation with you. When I spoke to an organization, I mean, they came initially to knock on the door and said, would you be interested to, help us in transforming or pivoting our organization? Asia is a very small, and especially the tech industry in Asia is very small and incestuous. So, you tend to know a lot of people. What had happened with this organization when they first reached out was, it was an organization that I was well aware of in the way they treated their people on a reduction in force. And this is something which I take quite, I suppose, especially working in the go-to-market strategy part of the world, I look quite strongly on the way we design our go-to-market, being concerted in the way we're spending, budgeting, but also, thinking, quite concisely around expansions, when's the right time? Are we doing things in a way that can also feed everybody? From a revenue world, you want to make sure a book of business is sufficient to feed individuals, that you're not taking individuals from a comfortable, stable, successful environment only to maybe put them at risk and sending them out the door 6 months later when we decide we're actually not investing in that area. So when this organization came to me, they said, oh, look, we're doing this massive expansion. Would you like to come on board? And when I spoke to them and I asked them, what's your investment? And they said, well, we've got you in for an investment, and then we'll just take on more salespeople and we'll build this organization out. My question to them is, at the time was, is there an investment in the business that we're building out? We're going into this new territory. What's your thought process? And just said, well, we'll give it a year, and if it doesn't work out, we can pull back, but you'll be part of the APJ leadership team. You'll be safe through. And I just went, that's not actually the way that I would like to participate. But my first question whenever I have a conversation is, how do you treat your people? I'm not as worried about how you treat your customers, because how you treat your people predicates how you're going to treat your customers. That's always a litmus test for me.
Hey everybody, Gordon here. Just stepping in right now just to give a quick message about the Get Stuff Done podcast, which up until now have completely been self-funded. It's been supported by RDI Worldwide, who are the leaders in recruitment for global companies based in Korea who want to hire bilingual talents. But your support would be really, really appreciated. First of all, you can do that for free. by subscribing to this podcast and sharing it with your network and others. But also, if you would like to actually check out our merch, we have launched some Get Stuff Done products. You can find these on the link tree on the social media channels. And check out the Get Stuff Done baseball caps, t-shirts, and other great little products. Hope you like. And if you have any other suggestions for things you would like to see in the Get Stuff Done range, then let me know. Thank you.
Yeah, definitely. And so then when it comes to that approach and that mindset, and I would, maybe you go so far as to call it the Irene Chan way, you know, as it is your own unique style. When it comes to getting stuff done, and of course, as the title of this podcast, I have to ask, how do you go about on a daily, weekly, monthly, annual basis, making sure that you get stuff done and making sure that you get everything that you need to get done?
Yeah, not easy. Can I tell you, it's not an easy task, especially for somebody who likes to be part of everything and have diversity.
Okay.
What keeps me going, firstly, as a side note, is ensuring that I've got that diversity in, you know, what feeds me as well. And what I mean by that is when I look at what I have to get done, it's also ensuring that what's important, what are priorities, are kept front of mind. And so, you know, if I'm within a career opportunity, it's also ensuring, I think the way we had been brought up was, what feeds you, but also what you contribute back to the community. So it's a 30-30-30, right? So it's, you fill up your own bank account, you fill up for saving, for your spending, and then you've got 30% that goes back out in community. So one third for yourself, one third to play with, and then one third out into the market. And so when I look at how I prioritize, first and foremost, it's myself, which is, it's back to families, making sure that my foundation is firm. And that's super hard to do as a parent, because you always think, I'll feed the kids, I'll put time there. And as my kids have grown older, I mean, they sat me down, Gordon, and they just went, you brought us up, done a great job, thank you, Mom. And they literally sat me down and did this, Gordon. And they said, now we would like a relationship with you, more like a friend. We don't need Mom anymore. And I was like, oh, I don't really know what that's like.
I don't understand that.
Yeah, they said, we want to have a relationship with you that is more of a friend, because as a mom, I'm always going, can you put the flag up? Are you just telling me, or am I going to go into fix mode? Because I will go into fix mode. And they just went, we're good, right? Let us go on our journey. And we just want to banter. And I'm still learning how to do that. You know, I'm still doing that. I'm good.
That sounds a distant future for me with mine at the age they are at. But yeah, I can fully imagine just how momentous that is when it comes to be. But in a sense, inevitable. I think it's Tony Robbins who talks about buckets and the buckets of your life and making sure that all the buckets are full. And it sounds like you fill your own bucket by filling the buckets of others. That seems to be what...
I do, Gordon, and you've nailed it. I absolutely thoroughly enjoy it. You know, in many ways, it's stupidly selfish. Like, everybody goes, oh, you're giving, you're part of this, you're part of that. I was like, you do realize that's how I get fed as well, you know? It's not just I'm giving, but that's what feeds me, because connecting with others is what feeds me. It's just a different personality type, so... You know, yes, I'm all about feeding my family, making sure everybody's happy and safe. But at the same time, being part of a community is what really enriches me as well. You know, that invigorates me, that makes me a better whole person, that when I come into a career environment, into the office, I've got an ability to connect with people in a more human way. I've got a more diverse conversation pool to pull from, you know, and experiences to pull from. And importantly, at times when things become more challenging, it also balances things out. I mean, no different to with kids and bullying. It's the same thing as an adult, is you've got other things, and I'm not defined by who I am in my title or my role. You know, that's part of growing up, I think, sometimes.
To be as practical as possible now for the listeners, if there is someone who is listening who is not new in their career, let's say an experienced career professional who is hearing this conversation and thinking, yes, I am not the person I want to be. I don't feel that, like, they're not comfortable in their own shoes, like that authenticity, that they hear it and they realize that they need that and they would like to strive for that, but they definitely feel, they recognize that they don't have it. What would be maybe some of the initial steps that they could take to try to get towards that? What would be they as an individual? What would be maybe some of the things that they could possibly do to go on that journey?
Yeah, well, you know, I like telling stories rather than hypotheticals. Let me, you know, if I can maybe share with you how I went on that journey.
Please
because
do.
I did go through that. This is who I need to be. This is how I need to present. And I shouldn't show you who I really am because I don't know whether, you know, they're good enough or they're who they should be. I started it originally because I noticed that my kids are learning what I was doing, not what I was telling them. And first and foremost, it was getting comfortable with myself. Now, I didn't get comfortable with myself by going, no, you're good, you're fine, look in the mirror. It was surrounding myself with individuals whose values I aligned with, you know, aspiring and being part of circles where our values didn't align, but then wanting to feel accepted. I didn't like who I was becoming. And then that didn't validate me or bring out any authenticity in me. So what I realized was, is this isn't the circle I want to be part of. Like, is this who I want to be? That's not the person I want to become. So what I then realized was really striving to look for groups and community. I mean, really finding a tribe, right? But really finding my tribe by finding aligned values. It took me ages to identify that I wasn't looking for titles or anything at all, but aligned values and appetites gave me that safe space to start to become more authentic in myself. And then through that was that twofold in learning that vulnerability by giving, you know, and by putting my hand up and saying, well, here's my experience. I hope it helps, but this was my learning out of my experience. So I started firstly with the discussions by going, heck, you know, you're asking this question. This is what I did. And, you know, this worked, this didn't work. And then as I evolved from there, then I started to feel a little bit more comfortable that went, wow, actually I've got some experience. And I've also, as a person, I'm growing comfortable with who I am, you know, and you start to get the same, I suppose, the feedback from others who go, I value the time that you're spending with me.
And just to really double down and get really specific, how did you go about finding those groups or people that shared that mindset?
Opening a lot of doors until I found the right one. The hardest thing,
being inquisitive,
being curious, being humble to go into a room and sometimes go, oh my gosh, this is so not me. But the thing that I practiced with a lot, which I really enjoyed after the fact, not in the middle of it, is trying to find a connecting point. At any room I entered, making it a point to find something that would connect us in a conversation and have a leave behind and walk away with a, oh, wow, I appreciate you. You know, that time that we connected, I learned and got to appreciate you for who you are. And I hope you had some value time with me. So even though the room may not have been right, it helped me hone that skill in getting to know individuals as people. Yeah, that's been super impactful in work as well.
That's a great takeaway to find that connection point. And I'm going to triple down and then ask, how do you go about finding that connection point? And it can be, you know, as lightweight as you like, but just to be as practical as possible.
Yeah. I listen to a lot of podcasts. I love learning. Right. And some of the things that I learned really helped me. Don't ever go into a room and say, what do you do? What's your job? Tell me about what you do. What I go in at is to get to know an individual. So I deliberately don't ask about somebody's title, role, company. It's getting known to the person. If I hear an accent, I'll say, oh, you know, do I hear an accent? Where's that from? And that gives me a bit of a heads up. Or if, you know, another one is really about food. I'm the first one to say that, you know, my heritage, it's all about food and culture. So I'll find areas that are safe to try to find a connection. And sometimes I just keep digging. You know, I'll start and look for what's environmental and then start pushing on the next level until I get some connection. And a lot of times it's being observant, you know, it's really being observant and trying one thing and just going at it until I see a spark and go, okay, now we'll just talk. But it is having that vulnerability and humility to go in and take that first step.
Yeah. Yeah. I think one in that area, the one that I always think about is when you are thinking about making a point or asking a question, and you then it kicks in and you're like, no, don't ask a question. Remember that there's almost guaranteed someone else thinking the same thing who would like to also ask the question. So you're not just asking it for yourself, you're asking it for everyone. And then that can help everyone to come together. And also I love the avoiding of what do you do? Because for so many people, it's job title and company. And then that's their, well, let's be honest, it is the socially acceptable way of defining yourself. It's the most common answer to that question. Whereas actually finding out about the person, what makes them tick, I think is really a much more effective way to find that commonality, that connection. You know, people will joke about if someone answers with a certain job title, all the implicit qualities that we put onto that particular type of job or title come with that, and those stereotypes, and that makes it can be extremely positive or it can be extremely negative, right? Yeah, so often, you know, someone answers the question, oh, so you must be very blah blah blah, and those assumptions that they're not helpful to anyone. And in fact, I must say that is a little bit of culture shock for me coming back to the UK in the last few weeks, in that there is less assumption of those kinds of things in the UK compared to in Korea. And so I think the conversation does go a little bit more gently, a bit more inquisitively and open to actually inquire rather than assume, which can lead to different reactions from different people. I want to ask now about a time when you perhaps didn't get everything done that was asked of you, or even on a personal basis, you set out to do something and it was not the outcome or result that you wanted. How did you go about moving on from that or getting back to where you wanted to be? Tell us a time in that aspect.
Yeah, it's an interesting question, right? I think priorities are always so super difficult, and a lot of times, you know, I say, you know, my why is making sure I hit with my priorities. But there's so many situations that happen that you kind of forget your priorities. So let me share with you a little bit personal. So when I look at, you know, with family, my mum was on a dementia journey. And I work overseas. And that's both for financial reasons, also career, and also for my children to understand that as a global citizen, you know, you are beyond the geographic borders. However, I mean, how many times has it happened for us who live, you know, as a global family that, you know, I've got this meeting, I'll change my flight home, I'll change my flight home here, I'll change my flight home there. And you go, I'm going back, but I'll delay for a week, I'll delay for 2 weeks, it's okay. And it really sets a different expectation as well to the people that you surround yourself with, you know. So, you know, in this situation, I had quite a few projects going on. We were going through quite a go-to-market change and and decision as a head office. And I'd said to my parents, you know, I'm coming back, but I moved it out a week, but I then went, I'm heading home because I'm very, shall we say, you lead by example. You know, you know, very early on, especially in Asia, that if you don't do that, everyone's going to wait until you go home. So you've really got to lead by saying, no, I'm serious. These are your priorities. Well, outcome based. We don't have to all be in the office all the time. I went back and I landed in on the Friday morning, got back in time for my mom to go into cardiac arrest on Friday evening and did resus. I was able to be with her and spend time with her, but she arrested that evening. It was quite the wake-up call in very many regards, because being able to juggle, thinking you're juggling really well, you know, managing priorities and having the conversation to say, you're on a dementia journey, it's a long-term journey, we expect it to go a certain way, you can't assume what's going to happen tomorrow. And then realizing that, geez, you know what, tomorrow's not counted. Tomorrow's really not counted. And then realizing at the time with my firm that they just went, we understand what's going on, just work out of that. You know, take the bereavement time, but work out of there until things are stabilized. And then you realize I was the only one that was making the reason why I couldn't go back, you know, because I thought that I had to be at a theater office to run my GTM. Completely changed my approach later on with my children, as one of them was going through a little bit more of a challenging time. I just went, not for all the money in the world. Money you can make over again. There's things that I don't want to be regretting. So I do the same thing with work. Make sure you prioritize based on what you're not going to regret and what's going to move the needle. You know, and continuously checking in. Am I doing what is the highest motivation, highest priority, and the most impactful?
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing. And, you know, it's clear that up until that point, you thought you were doing the best thing. The entire time you were trying to do the best thing. But what you realized is that that was not the best thing for that part of your life. And that part of your life is actually more important than the other part of your life. Yeah. And I guess that from that moment, you've kind of never looked back. You've always, you know, maintained that fresh mindset from then.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because you know what, although I thought I had my priorities, I was juggling hard, right? Because I was trying to do everything for home whilst I was trying to juggle this, and at the end of the day, neither was at its optimal. And I say I have zero regrets in the choices that I've made now going forward. It's a hard lesson to learn. But now when I stand up front and center in, you know, being present in something, I know that my house is clean. I know that, you know, my family are looked after. I know that when I go into an organization and focus on a specific part of a project, that I've continuously cross-checked and rechecked that is the highest priority, you know? That means I can bring my full self. And that's really important, as opposed to juggling everything and not doing the best and knowing you're not doing your very best.
Yeah, yeah. But in light of everything we've been talking about in the way that you so passionately give to others, I understand that you also have a role with a dementia organization. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. I've been very passionate with the dementia community burgeoning. It's absolutely, you know, every 3.2 seconds, someone's diagnosed with dementia. And early onset dementia has increased more and more. So, you know, you could have Lewy body, which is a very fast and aggressive dementia, or you could be blessed or not blessed with a longer dementia journey. So in Australia, I'm a dementia advocate. And what that means is, you know, I actively contribute both from a community perspective on if we've got legislative community forums or trials that are happening. And then in Singapore, I also volunteer as a carers group and bringing my own flavor to it, which is, you know, we do potlucks, we get together during COVID, we put together Zooms and WhatsApps, because as caregivers, is that support for each other. And then I dabbled in entrepreneurship to bring together a dementia platform and changed our relationship with healthcare to be very much like the tech world, very subscription-based, because access to geriatricians is both incredibly expensive at $500 to $700 a pop, and they're not available. The amount of people with dementia is just not accessible. And the dementia journey is just watching somebody actively die. So, you know, see a geriatrician today, but tomorrow the symptoms are different. Right. So very active in the dementia community.
And are there any other aspects of your life which you're also involved in? I mean, I think we've talked about career aspect and mental health? Any other aspects that are a big part of your life?
One which has been all the way through, and that's I volunteer with animals. So in Australia, I was contributing a lot, especially with more of the aged dogs that were in shelters and pounds, and really coordinating, because I traveled a lot for work, coordinating from rescue through to their fosterers or their adopters through, you know, connecting all the, which is what I do versus doing all the connections, but connecting through from the truck drivers to volunteer drivers to get a dog from a pound over to its foster. And then in Singapore with stray dog feeding. So I don't have a car. So what I can do is, you know, get all the food, cook that up, make them into little bags. So stray dog feeders can give that out. But one thing that I'm very passionate about is really, as an individual, championing workplace environments and creating safe places, you know, and it's not a community, it's not a thing that I think it's being with like-minded people like yourselves and being in communities like Pavilion, where we try to elevate, you know, the kind of work values and leadership values that we'd like to emulate and lead by example. I do that myself, and then something I'm super, super keen and proud of is that in any environment that I'm at is to firstly create an environment of safety and kindness and operate with kindness. I don't think that can be taken lightly in the world that we are in. It can't be taken for granted. You know, it's an assumption that we can't have.
It can't be taken for granted, and also can't be done without, I think, also in the long term. I think that's what we're talking about, the sustainability aspect. So with all that being said, putting that into the bracket of transferable skills, and I think we've talked about a lot of different aspects of how people work and how people approach and how people, you know, think about their authenticity within the kind of specific area of transferable skills and people thinking about building careers, maybe switching careers, maybe just elevating their career in the same space. What do you consider to be the most important transferable skill in 2024?
Yeah, I think the most transferable skill, especially in this technology age, is the ability to connect with others. That can't be replaced. You know, our ability to communicate, collaborate across all channels. I find so many times, I'm just as guilty of it, is you can get right into working or right into something and forget about your network, forget about that wider community around you, and only put your head up when something hits the ground and you're like, oh my gosh, you know, now I've got to re-network again.
Yeah.
And not realizing that network feeds you as much as you feed in, and you're only going to be able to get value out of it if you actively contribute to it. You can't go back into your network when you need it and go, hey, by the way, I need a job. You know, it's self-serving, but it also feeds you because it gives you a different perspective. And I find that has, you know, that keeps the sanity, you know. It really, really has to ensure that from a mental wellness, we do this with our children where we say, you know, it's not just about your little microcosm at school. It's the same thing with work. You know, that safety in realizing that there's such a wide community out there. Going to dance again.
And on that note.
I'm so sorry.
It looks like it's giving us the cue. Irene, I think we're pretty much out of time. I know we could keep talking about the wide range of topics that we've covered, which I think have been super insightful and practical for people listening to the Get Stuff Done podcast. If people would like to get in touch with you, if they would like to reach out, what would be the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, look, my LinkedIn, I'm sure, can be shared. And I am always on WhatsApp. So LinkedIn has the WhatsApp as well.
All right.
Absolutely. Always keen to connect.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for sparing your time to be a guest on the podcast today. I really appreciate it. And I also learned a lot from you, which I expected, and you didn't disappoint. So Irene, thank you so much.
Thank you. It was lovely to meet you. And thanks for the opportunity, Gordon.
Absolutely. And remember, let's get stuff done.
Thank you for listening to the Get Stuff Done podcast. If you would like to be a guest in the future, please do reach out. Or if you would like to recommend someone, that would be awesome as well. Make sure you keep listening, as we will be bringing you fresh insights every week, because getting stuff done is something everyone needs.